Welcome to episode 10. I'm Emily Reese from June Media, and this is music by Matthias Bossi for the 5th anniversary of Super Meat Boy. More from Matthias shortly. First, you'll hear from Seth Alter and Marley Magner. Seth's experience teaching at a charter school inspired him to create a game called No Pineapple Left Behind. Marley wrote the music. So Seth, this game came out of your experience as a public school teacher, right?
As a charter school teacher, yes.
Oh, a charter school teacher. Okay, so tell us a little bit about how the game came to be, and then we'll get Marley more involved in the conversation here in a few minutes.
How the game came to be? I was about halfway, maybe through neocolonialism at the time when I was teaching. Okay. So it was sort of a side project at that point. I started in the spring teaching, and that was great. I had a wonderful time. In the fall, not so much. Mm. I had a lot more oversight on me. Hmm. And they were not okay with my kids. Hmm. And I was very fed up with it, and I was talking to a friend, and I was saying, the school really, really wants me to treat my kids as statistics. And when I do that, everything's fine. But if I start treating them like people, all of a sudden I don't have any support or any resources to speak of. Hmm. And around then I realized, well, that would be a pretty good video game. So that's sort of the very genesis of it. I made neocolonialism first because I thought that would be the easier project. In retrospect, I was dramatically wrong.
Really?
Neocolonialism was much harder. So Marley and I collaborated on that first game, and now this is the second.
Regarding No Pineapple Left Behind, tell me a little bit about how the game works and just kind of the overall concept of it.
Well, it's a school simulator. So it's sort of a top-down perspective, and you're sort of the principal of the school. And in that school, there's some children and some pineapples. Children, as you may know, are pretty complicated. They want to do all sorts of things. They have their own personalities. They're kind of a pain in the ass, which is a problem. You kind of mostly just want them to take tests, because if they take tests, the school gets more money. Hmm. If you sufficiently dehumanize them, you can turn them into pineapples. And pineapples, they don't have feelings or personalities. They're just test-taking machines. So your ultimate goal is to balance the budget. And in doing so, you will find that it's generally beneficial to have pineapples.
So this is clearly a statement on No Child Left Behind, right?
Yes.
Yes. And so explain a little bit about that, since you were actually a teacher and had to deal with that. Talk a little bit more about what that meant for you in your profession at the time.
There's two different things we're talking about that are sort of two sides of a coin kind of deal. Mm-hmm. The No Child Left Behind Act ties the school's budget to its test-taking performance, which any degree of analysis could tell you is rather illogical, because the schools that aren't doing so well receive budget cuts. And all schools must therefore focus mostly on the test and less on anything else in order to stay solvent. Mm-hmm. The charter school where I was is the thing that comes right after that. Charter schools are primarily an anti-union measure. You can pay your teachers negligible amounts of money and do all sorts of fancy things with the budget, and also focus on tests in a way the union would never have allowed. And the main reason is to keep on top of this.
So, Marley, at what point did you get involved here? Musically?
Seth brought the idea to me very early on, actually. Like, as we were wrapping up Neocolonialism, he was telling me his ideas for the next one. It's funny, because the original ideas for how the music should be integrated into the gameplay, mm-hmm. that's actually what we've ended up. We've come all the way around the bend, and that's what we're doing now in the in the final implementation. So,
okay.
Wait, how you, what do you mean?
Well, like the idea of having the music play in between classes as the children like bounce along to class. That was kind of the original idea. And then we played around with some options here like 2 years later. We're basically back to that idea.
It was a good first idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I got to have my gears turning for a good year before I started writing music for it, which is really great when you have time to think about the ideas of everything before you actually get technical.
So describe what the music is like. What angle did you decide to take that way?
We had the concept pretty early on. I think that was one of the first things we ever talked about. I met up with Marley at Arisia sort of by coincidence. If you know what Arisia is, it's a local sci-fi con.
Oh, cool.
And Marley snuck in because he had a toy laser gun, so they figured he was supposed to be there. You remember this, Marley?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he just had a toy laser gun, so he got in. So I had been planning to meet with him, but we sat down. And I said, "I, you know, this is where I'm going with this game. I want sort of Tim Burton meets Soviet marching music."
Nice. I mean, that's like brain fireworks to hear that kind of description, right, Marley?
Yeah, yeah. It's great. Marching music is so fun, so bombastic.
Yeah.
And you know, Tim Burton is. You know, Danny Elfman is such a magical sound.
Danny Elfman, that's what I meant, yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of...
I'm glad you understood.
Are there live musicians, then, that perform on what you've written so far?
Well, it's definitely a hybrid score. There's
okay.
a ton of vocals on it.
Oh, nice.
And I'm going to bring in the Videri String Quartet for at least a couple cues on the song. That, like when you win a level, when you lose a level. There's a few cues that we're gonna work them in just because we love working with them.
Marley's actually working on a secret bonus track.
Sweet.
So I can't tell you what it is or how to access it except that it's going to be 80s hair metal style.
Nice. So you'll have to accomplish something specific in the game to unlock it, huh?
Right. No, it's
awesome.
Like it's the hidden track.
Awesome.
Well, you know it's hidden, right?
Yeah, you have to like basically what is it? You have to
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No spoilers. We want it to be spoiler free.
If you say it, it's not hidden.
I can
yeah,
neither
right?
confirm nor deny the existence of a secret bonus.
There you
it's
go.
A secret track. I'll say that much, and it's definitely 80s hair metal style, but I can't tell you how to get it.
Tell me more about neocolonialism. Explain that game a little bit.
That game, which we did do with Videri, was it's a turn-based game. Looks a little bit like Risk, and you're trying to extract as much wealth from the world as possible.
Was that your very first game?
That was my very first.
Okay. So clearly, Seth, you've always been a gamer and interested in games because, I mean, you basically quit teaching to do this, and I imagine this has always been a hobby and an interest of yours.
I mean, I played a lot of strategy games. I don't know. I played Civilization II when I was around 8. I think I picked that up.
Mm-hmm.
I always played those sort of deep strategy games.
How about you, Marley?
My first gameplay was Super Mario on Super Nintendo, and that was probably, I don't know, when I was 12 or 13. A lot of side-scrollers. I've played quite a bit of games, I guess, in my life. I like to play strategy games, more like Seth likes to play.
And how did you start composing? What was that journey like for you?
I started playing music in about fifth grade. From there, friends of mine in the concert band, we started a little rock band, and my friend taught me guitar. I played with them for years all through high school, playing shows. and we would write original songs and play concerts. And songwriting is a very expressive thing, and it's really fun. I discovered how fun it was just to make up your own songs and play them, you know. And then I realized that you can have a career composing music and film and TV, and the concept of composing for video games wasn't on the table for me yet. And then I got accepted to Berklee College of Music, and I studied film scoring and all matter of different kinds of composition, classical composition, tonal harmony, and jazz theory, as well as like orchestration. And there's a lot of recording involved with the film scoring program. Okay. So it's pretty well-rounded. And then in my sophomore year, Berklee started the video game music minor. It's an interactive audio program. Okay. And I was able to take all the credits I needed to do that as a minor. And it's liberating to write a composition, because at least for me as a composer, when I hear a melody or something in my head or a rhythm, it stays in my head until I either forget about it or until I record it and get it down. And it's maddening to have these these songs running in your head, sometimes like two at once or three at the same time. And so it's incredibly liberating to get that out of my head.
Where can people learn more about you? That's a good question.
Subalterngames.com is the website.
Okay. I have a website for my compositional work. It's marleymagner.com. Mm-hmm. And you can find a link to my SoundCloud there.
In my mind, the trickiest part of the audio design on this project was an operational constraint we put on ourselves, which is that you can't have music during class time. So trying to figure out ways to fill up the soundscape without that music at those junctures has definitely been a challenge. Marley, would you agree or disagree on that?
Yeah, typically in most games, you have some kind of background music for the majority of gameplay, I think.
Yep.
And with this, there's five blocks per day, so we really only have music. If you hit pause, there's sound, there's a different track that plays, and, you know, in the moments between classes is when we decided that's really the only appropriate time to have music.
We have a bunch of promo videos we did of some upcoming features.
Okay.
That have a sort of peppier song to the background. That was made by my dad.
That's awesome.
I told my parents about this project, and my dad said, you have to have a fight song. I was visiting them last fall, and on the day I left, my dad apparently woke up at like 4 or 5 in the morning and banged out this song.
It's been a pleasure to talk with both of you, and I really do wish you all the best of luck with your projects.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on this show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
It's our pleasure. Keep up the great work with your podcast.
Learn more about Seth Alter and Marley Magner at patreon.com/junemedia. So every once in a while, and it always surprises me, but sometimes people get into this business completely on accident. And Matthias Bossi, that's exactly what happened to him. He's ended up working on some pretty major games, The Binding of Isaac Rebirth and the 5th anniversary edition of Super Meat Boy, which just came out for PS4 and Vita in early October.
I play drums. I mean, before I started writing for games, I was a touring musician. My wife and I were in bands for years together. We still play together. We have a duo called Rabbit Rabbit.
Cool.
Prior to that, my wife Carla and I toured in this band forever called Sleepy Time Gorilla Museum, which was this Dadaist cabaret metal extravaganza.
Nice.
And that's actually how I met Ed McMillan. And I basically, I mean, he's kind of my main employer these days.
Okay. So
he was an Uber fan, and we would, you know, we lived in the Bay Area for years. That's, prior to moving back to Cape Cod, we were living in Oakland and would often play in Santa Cruz, where Ed is from. And he and his girlfriend, now wife, Danielle, would come out to our shows in Santa Cruz, and all the things they're doing these days to a much more enormous level they were doing back then. Wow. I think I met him just after Gish had won Game of the Year in 04.
Oh, wow.
And he was just like still working, I think, at GameStop and just struggling to make it happen. I mean, on the level that we were, it's like where people have your album and they come to your concerts, but you still can't pay the rent kind of thing. Until we moved back to Cape Cod, that's how I made my living, was as a gun-for-hire studio musician, playing singer-songwriters' records and touring with bands. And the game thing totally happened by accident. When The Binding of Isaac, the original, first came out, you know, just after Meat Boy came out in, I guess it would have been 2010, because the fifth anniversary just came out on Tuesday. He was like so shocked by the success of it all and just wanted to keep working. So he tossed off this game like really quickly with a programmer and asked me. I used to do a bunch of voiceover stuff. I still do. It's sort of a small part of my many talent life. He asked me to do the narration for the opening credits for The Binding of Isaac, the original one that came out, I guess, in 2011. And that was sort of the beginning of us like, oh, hey, let's do something together. A year later, he and Tommy, who's his partner in Team Meat, Super Meat Boy and other things, started working on another game called Mugenics, which is still in development. I think it ballooned to such a degree that the game took over. Like basically this very strange, primitive South Park looking black and white cat simulator where we were supposed to make these really fun kind of sloppy retro Tom Waits meets Tin Pan Alley tunes with vocals, which we're still kind of working on, which is really, I think when the game comes out, it's going to be a really neat game.
Hey there, boys, the name is Dirty Mittens. The slinkiest kitty you've seen in all your days. I eat caviar, kibble, wear a diamond, flea, a collar, and a bedding enough to make you holler. My feline tricks will turn night into day.
So was Super Meat Boy the first game you wrote music for then?
No. The first game I wrote music for is a game that's not even out yet, and that's Mugenics.
Okay, okay.
Which is still in development, almost 4 years in here.
Okay.
First game that I wrote music for that came out is The Binding of Isaac Rebirth, which came out.
Oh, that came out before Super Meat Boy.
Well, Super Meat Boy, the original, came out in 2010.
Right.
That was with Danny Baranowski, the original composer.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay.
And then, a year after that, The Binding of Isaac came out also with Danny writing the music.
Okay.
for one reason or another, Danny and Ed and Team Meat and all the various tendrils of Ed's life, they're not working together anymore. So we submitted music from Eugenics and started writing that. And then the Binding of Isaac Rebirth project started to coalesce. And we were given the job to write music for that. Okay. That came out a year ago. The Super Meat Boy 5th anniversary just came out on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a... I wouldn't even call it a three-way collaboration because Ridiculon, our company, ended up doing the bulk of the soundtrack. Okay. But this fellow named Scattle, who's a really cool kind of electronic, you know, beat musician, did the soundtrack for this game called Hotline Miami. Laura Shigihara did the...
She's great.
Yeah, so it was the three of us... At the end of this month, the expansion of the like totally bonkers Binding of Isaac Rebirth world that came out a year ago called Binding of Isaac Afterbirth is coming out on October 30th. So we have kind of a fun, busy end to the year here.
Sure.
And then an iOS version of Super Meat Boy is in the works, and we're cranking. I'd say we're musically almost there, and that I hope come out in the next 6 months, like you're the iPhone version of this game that people love so much.
I do love these games so much. I mean, when people talk about The Binding of Isaac, it's like that game delivered one of those unique gaming experiences, you know?
Yeah. Ed, I think to this day is still shocked with how well it's done, considering the content. It's really odd and it's very subversive and it deals with things that you just are not dealing with in life. People are not really talking about this, but the fact that it's a game and every kid and every parent and every aunt and uncle across the entire planet are playing this game with a little naked baby who shoots tears and battles his own inner demons. And I mean, it's like, it's really insane. And it's so interesting. You know, Ed speaks very eloquently on the content, and basically, you know, he grew up a hardcore Christian, or like he was brought up in that world, and this was just sort of him processing his childhood. Mm-hmm. He just nails the child's perspective, the ghosts and the ghouls and the goblins and your own mom and like the devil and the basement and the dark, and just it's intense and it's sweet and it's sad, it's everything. So It was a joy to work on that project. And that joy in general, I feel so fortunate to have sort of fallen into this role where we feel like we're the first guys he calls, because he loves music and we love talking about music. And often the things that he's referencing are the bands that I've been in. And it's really fun for both of us to be able to like channel that stuff.
Let's describe the game in a little more detail, because some people listening might not have ever played it. So tell me a little bit more about the world of The Binding of Isaac.
Okay. Isaac, young boy, and his mother live alone on a house on the hill. She's confined to the living room watching Christian broadcasts on the television all day, and gets it into her mind that God is speaking to her and that her son Isaac is impure and must be sacrificed in order to get good with God. So Isaac is chased into his room by his mother with a butcher knife. He finds a trap door that leads to the basement and escapes down into the underworld, where he descends into what amounts to the nine circles of hell, battling his demons, mm-hmm. which include his own mother, which include Satan, which includes versions of himself, and ghosts and ghouls and goblins all conjured up in the terrified mind of this young child. And it's so open-ended, and it's you die every time, you know? you just got to go and go and go, and then you start all over again. It was a really fun template for us to work within, mm-hmm. Musically speaking. I mean, I think our soundtrack really, at least in the Rebirth world, varied so differently from Danny Baranowski's original, more mm-hmm. electronic, chiptune-y world. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We really played up the ambient side of these dark caves and the discordant, uncomfortable side in a way that really, I hope, brings the game to life.
Tell me about you working on the music, like compositionally and as a team.
Sure. I have a writing partner, engineer, right-hand man named John Evans, great bass player, session guy, touring fellow, Linda Perry, Sarah McLachlan, Tori Amos. I mean, he's kind of the shit. He is really the man. He also grew up here on Cape Cod. He's 10 years older than me.
Oh, no way.
When we moved back, he started calling me because he was our neighbor in the Bay Area when we lived up. And I totally lied and said that everything was going on over here. This place is incredible. What a special paradise where we can work freely and do whatever we want. And that was complete bullshit. So he and he moved with his wife. Oh. They sold their house and they sold their businesses and moved back here. And we built a studio in his house. We would have bands in, you know, singer-songwriters. We was kind of continuing what we had been doing back in the Bay Area separately, mm-hmm. producing records. And the Ed McMillan thing came into the picture very, very soon after John moved to town in 2011.
Okay.
We have a really, really good working relationship. John is incredibly methodical. He's a just genius engineer, just like Pro Tools wizard. He plays everything. And unlike me, who chases the work and explodes ideas and gets a million things down on paper and then looks in the other direction. Squirrel! That's me. I'm like squirrel guy. John sees to it that we actually finish stuff. In terms of working together, it's interesting, given that we're both rhythm section players, mm-hmm. especially in regards to the Binding of Isaac stuff, the Meat Boy stuff, that's kind of where our brains start first.
Okay.
We're kind of building from the basement up. We'll come up with a drum groove, like some kind of form within the loop of the song, whatever. Let's say we have a 2-minute boss track that mm-hmm. needs 4 sections. Sometimes I'll go down and just play the drums first. Then John will add bass. Then we'll add in a layer of looping programming and then build up to a rhythm guitar track up and up and up until we get to the top. And at that point, it's such a collision of sounds and interlocking rhythmic puzzle pieces that our melodies are often very... Well, there doesn't need to be a lot of information for it to be heard as a melody.
Mm-hmm.
rather than starting at the top and moving our way back down, where we've always kind of worked backwards.
Interesting.
Occasionally, I will come in. You know, there are some more quiet, sort of introspective pieces, little between level things, and you know, the music that plays when you die in Isaac, where I would write on the piano and come into work. But often, this stuff is improvised. And Ed, you know, at least in The Binding of Isaac, there were some really cool things that he went for that were a really fun challenge. We came up with this thing called adaptive layering.
Okay.
Which means that as you get further and further into a level, there's a whole other layer of, be it a guitar track or a percussion track or like a choir track, that is essentially muted. And then when you get to a certain point in a level, it becomes unmuted and then feels like the music unfolds a little more. Because everything is just looping forever, and to convince the ear and the player that you are ever crescendoing as opposed to looping stealthily back on yourself. This layering thing was really fun in that it just made it feel like the music really did just keep going and going and going, and this thing would eventually, like, wait, how did that happen? This guitar melody just appeared.
I would imagine you never thought you would be writing music in video games or working in video games.
Absolutely not. No.
Yeah.
I'm not a gamer by nature. I think that's another reason why Ed and I get along so well. We bring a certain irreverence to the table that he has brought to the gaming industry. I mean, he pushes people's buttons, and he lives for that.
So do you still do voice work then, too? You're still doing
some... Yes, I do. Yeah.
That's really cool.
I read... I do some books for, you know, Audible, and I do commercial voiceovers, and I do some sound effects for Ed's games.
With your voice, or you create sound effects in a computer?
Yeah, with my voice. I do it. You know, a lot of the sound effects in Isaac are my wife and my daughter and myself.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. So the voice of Isaac was at the time my 4-year-old daughter. She's 6 now. And Isaac's mom is my wife, Carla.
Oh,
and a lot of like big devil, ogre, screaming demon voice. That's all me.
A pleasure to speak with you. I'm so glad that we connected, and I look forward to hearing what's next.
Okay, thanks, Emily.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You can learn more about Matthias Bossi at patreon.com/junemedia. And you can find his music under Ridiculon on Bandcamp. Thank you for listening to episode 10. I'm Emily Reese, and Sam Keenan is our producer. Say hi, Sam.
Hi.
And we're June Media. Special thanks this week to Trent Moriarty and Frederick. I'm so sorry I'm going to mess up your last name, but a huge thanks to Frederick Haven. We're on Facebook and YouTube at June Media and Twitter at Media June. Don't forget, June is JOON.